Today is June 19th, 2012, and this is Charlene Hershey Simpson interviewing Donald Gale Rozelle, who was a Peace Corps volunteer in Bolivia with the Bolivia II Project from 1962 to 1964. Okay, why don't we, tell me a little bit about the first year, that, you know, the year before you were going to go in. What made you decide to go into the Peace Corps?
Well, Kennedy was new president, and we heard about his announcement on the news, and it was exciting. And a friend of mine, Ismael Roshin, was my roommate in San Diego State, and he applied and was accepted into Columbia One. Mm-hmm. And I applied a week later and ended up in Bolivia Two. Wasn't much time in between the time we applied. Neither one of us had graduated. We still had, we were still undergraduates. But once we got accepted, we were fired up and ready to go.
Okay. So, did you do, so basically you joined the Peace Corps because of the Kennedy call?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah.
And you wanted to be out doing something?
Yeah. And that, and we had, I'd been working on my Spanish some over the years at San Diego State. We were close to the border. So Will and I, Urbano, another friend of mine, we'd go down to Mexico and hang out for the weekend or a week and practice our Spanish and stay up all night and drink and have a good time. And so the idea of going to Latin America suited me fine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I did start it.
Still working?
Yes, it is. Okay, so what did your family think when you decided to do that?
I can't remember. I was estranged from my dad at the time, but I can't remember him having any comment. Otherwise, my mom was kind of excited about it. My brother, nobody had any much to say about it. I was the baby of the family and pretty much did whatever I wanted to do, and they thought it was a good idea.
Okay.
I was also the only one that was finishing college, so.
Oh.
I guess Mom was a little concerned that I hadn't finished, but I told her I'd do it when I got back.
So when you applied, did you ask for any specific country or any place that you wanted to go?
I might have asked for Colombia, because my buddy was going to Colombia. Mm-hmm. Or at least maybe I didn't even know when I submitted the application, but I would have liked to have gone to Colombia. But yeah, when I got Bolivia, I mean, I never heard of Bolivia before. I doubt that I had, although I'd taken a lot of Latin American history at the time. And so anyway, Bolivia didn't make any difference to me. It was one place as good as another. Now, I don't know if I would have wanted to go to Africa, or I was, you know, Latin America was what I was interested in, so.
Okay.
I never thought about those other places until I ended up as a recruiter for Peace Corps.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, and so you were invited to join the Bolivia II project?
Yeah, invited to join Bolivia II, and we showed up at Arizona State University in Tempe in June of 1962 and started the training program.
Did you do anything special to get ready to go?
No,
I
quit my job, and I don't even remember how I got to Arizona, because I lived in the desert down in Southern California. I was in San Diego, and I don't remember how we got over there.
Well,
can't remember.
I know they sent me a ticket.
Airline ticket?
Airline ticket from Salt Lake City, so for all you know, you might have flown.
From where, though? Would have gone into Los Angeles. That was almost as far away as Arizona.
Yeah.
I lived halfway between Los Angeles and Arizona.
Okay, so let's talk about the training. What did you think of the training process? What exactly things did you experience?
Well, I enjoyed most all of the training, especially the general studies type of stuff and the cultural stuff. The language for me was a lot harder. I was not and never have been a good linguist like other people in the group, including you. But so the language part and the hours of language, that taxed me a little bit, and probably they had some doubts about sending me because of my poor ability to learn Spanish. Mm-hmm. So subsequently, the State Department has sent me back to language school 3 times, and I finally tested out at a fairly high in the State Department, but it took years. In fact, I didn't really start learning Spanish until I got a girlfriend in Bolivia.
In Bolivia. Yeah. Well, that happens.
Marcella, do you remember Marcella?
Yes. Yes. Did you did you find that the training was useful through your Peace Corps service?
Well, I enjoyed it. I mean, especially I liked it. You know, I was young and in those days, and I enjoyed the Outward Bound, and I enjoyed the travel associated with it. It got tiresome. And I think it would have been a lot easier for me if I had been a better language student, because that was the biggest part of it. But I enjoyed the training, and I especially enjoyed the Puerto Rico. That was a fun time in Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. And I think the group pretty much all got along well, and we didn't really have any big issues amongst ourselves. And the only real trauma came, I think, in Puerto Rico when they started cutting people. And probably we all lost a few friends that we never saw again after that. And I think at that time, too, I started losing a little respect for some of the administrative people for Peace Corps. Mm-hmm. And I think up until then, I never questioned them. But I think after that, then I started losing respect for specifically one person who I thought wasn't capable of judging us as potential volunteers, and yet he was sitting there on that committee, and I thought he was an idiot, basically.
Well, there were a number of people.
You know who I'm talking about, too, I bet.
I think so. Okay, so... All right, we did have an extended training period.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think there's been a group since then,
before or since, 6 months.
Who ended up training so long because of all these things.
But
that
the fact is, after we sent us, did we go home and then come back? And then that's when they extended us?
Yes.
And after that, I didn't train much.
No, we just...
I had a good, you know, I went up to Vermont. Had never been in Vermont, and fall in Vermont was just absolutely gorgeous, and I was from a place where I'd never seen a fall like that. And I like to read and sit in the windows of that big house and read a book, and got
it was
free.
Kind of like a vacation.
It was a vacation, yeah. And then what did they do, send us down to Miami and put us up there for a week or two?
No. We were in Miami. We met in Miami, and then that was the night of the Cuban Missile Crisis speech, Kennedy put up or shut up speech to Khrushchev, and then they sent us to Vermont.
Yeah.
From Vermont, we went directly to Bolivia.
Yeah, okay.
By way of Miami.
Yeah.
Can't get out of going south.
But anyway, it was all right, you know. You got tired of being, quote, trained on. That was, you know, and we were, but I enjoyed the trip down. I still remember fondly the trip down to La Paz, flying on a 707. It was the largest prop wing at the time.
Probably a 7.
I don't forget what it was, but it was the largest prop plane. We landed in Peru, and I remember getting a shoeshine and talking to somebody in Spanish and shoeshine. And then we landed up in La Paz, and you knew you were in trouble when the airline stewardesses all stood with oxygen masks at the door while they let us off. And that was quite a sight.
Yeah.
And then I remember going to the palace for a reception with Paz Estansoro. Mm-hmm. And I have pictures of that. And that was really interesting. Mm-hmm. And La Paz was fascinating. Mm-hmm. But I'm just as happy I didn't stay up there. I've been back two or three times to La Paz. It hasn't changed. And the trip from La Paz down to Cochabamba was a fascinating trip. I drove one of the jeeps, and it was from this road that was really scary. Remember that? Mm-hmm. That was a frightening road.
Terrible. I'm just afraid of heights, and so it was like a nightmare.
Yeah, I mean, it was really something. And those roads were, I mean, barely passable in parts. And we all made it down. And then when you get into Cochabamba, the valley, it starts to lighten up, and you see all the growth and the vegetation. And it's really quite a pleasant surprise. I guess we stayed there a while. I don't remember driving to Santa Cruz, yeah, but a few of us went down there. I guess we drove, huh?
Yeah, we drove. We were there just a few days. I think it was Thanksgiving when we got there
finally. Yeah. Yeah, we went down there.
Then we got to, you know, drive down to Santa Cruz. So when you got to where you were going to be, what, tell me about that experience.
In terms of the job? Mm-hmm. Well, that was...
What were you supposed to do?
That was kind of funny. I was supposed to be on the experiment station. And who was I out there with?
Jim Herberger? No.
Yeah, Jim Herberger was there. And
Norm Coble? No, he was...
Norm was there, yeah. And a kid that stuttered.
Oh, Peter Roycraft, wasn't it?
Peter Roycraft. Mm-hmm. And Peter and I shared a house, a little house out there, or half a house. And we knew what Peter's job was. He was actually an agronomist or something. He could actually do... I was a political scientist. I didn't know how to do anything. But they sent me out there to be... My counterpart was to be the maintenance man at the experiment station. And the job, the best I could describe it, was to rebuild and get functional the engines that had been left at the experiment station as part of the Point 4 program.
Wow.
The Point 4 program put a lot of money in experiment stations and schools, and they gave them equipment. And as soon as the machines broke down, everything else broke down with it. And so the concept was that we'd send these guys out to work, and well, they didn't have any parts for the machinery. So there was no, essentially in the end there was no job, and so I spent the rest of my time making up jobs and making sure that I kept myself scarce from any authority figures that were trying to make me accountable for some work effort. And I had a wonderful time.
So what kinds of things did you do?
Norm and I did a heifer project thing through, I don't know, the Baptist or somebody had it, but we distributed pigs, and then you get two back and distribute two more. We did that, but with pigs they progressed so fast that by the second generation we gave that up. But then we never got any more purebred animals after that. That was the difficulty with that program, was getting them into the country. They were donated. I worked with the 4-H, went to a 4-H camp. And in terms of legitimate jobs, I just didn't do much of anything. I visited a lot with other volunteers, traveled a lot. At one point, I went up to Columbia. I had $100 in my pocket. I got a gift or something, and I went to Colombia by land to visit my buddy up in Pasto and Nariño province. And that was quite an adventure, traveling by bus and hitchhike and railroad, and got all the way up there, and got all the way to Bogota and was broke, and I borrowed money from the Peace Corps director in Bogota to come back to Bolivia in time to just get back before I was found. I had vacation or something. I guess we all did at some point. So part of it was vacation, but I got back so I didn't get in trouble for going. I don't think I did. But I took a boat across Lake Titicaca, and that was fun. Met lots of really nice people. I hung out with a guy named Mumford Bruns and a rancher whose first name was Rene. I can't remember his last name out of General Saavedra. They had a big cattle ranch. And so sometimes when Rene or Mumford wasn't there, I'd go out to the cattle ranch and take care of it for them. Did you ever come out? Do you remember Rene?
I don't think so. I met people out on where the colonies were, you know, Okinawan colonies.
Yeah.
There were some, but I don't think I ever met those.
Anyway, it was a big cattle ranch, and so Mumford and I hung out together a lot. And then I helped the Merino priest, Jim Fitzgerald, who was a priest in Saavedra, and he also came out to Mineros, and you know, I'd help him with the kids or do different things with him. I didn't have a job. They forgot to give me a good job, and I didn't.
Well, they did that with a lot of people in those.
And it was too much effort for them to recreate your job somehow. And some of the people that were in charge of that stuff didn't know what they were doing anyway. And so it was best just to leave it alone, not complain, and get on with your life and have a good time and, you know, enjoy the place.
Can you think of any memorable events that happened while you were there?
Memorable events. Carnival.
Carnival.
I got involved with a carnival and a comparsa in Santa Cruz with guys, gals my own age. And they just accepted me like I was part of the family. And I mean, it was a ball. I don't know, 7 days?
Yeah, it was 11 days.
11 days or something. And we partied. We had parties going every day someplace. That was my first experience with that, and it was fascinating and a lot of fun and a lot of nice kids. And that was what I was doing. I was then hanging out with guys my own age and gals my own age, and it was pretty much the elite class in Santa Cruz, the Castillos, you know, and beautiful women and good dancers and good food, and I was in their homes. And that was really very interesting, very nice,
Where were you when Kennedy was assassinated?
I was living in Santa Cruz then, and that was another job I made. I got a job organizing the USIS library. So I was helping organize that, and I did some English teaching, but not much. And I was living in Santa Cruz, and I heard it on the radio in Spanish. And they kept repeating it, as they would have noticed like that, and repeating it. And my mind refused to hear what it was saying, and finally it came through what they were saying, and I ran out to find some other Americans that knew about it and heard about it. And that was quite a thing.
It was pretty traumatic.
It was pretty traumatic, yeah. It was traumatic for me. And then there was a guy down there, he was in Bolivia 3 or something. His name was Reese, engineer. And I remember seeing him, and I was kind of just shocked, and I said this, and he said something like, "Oh, so what?" And I just looked at him, and I said, "You're an idiot, you know." I never dealt with him again.
Yeah, I remember him. He was, that would not surprise me, that comment.
Something like that, I mean, you know.
Yeah. Okay, so it sounds like you had a really varied experience down there, a lot of different things that you did.
I mean, you probably remember things I did that I don't remember, but you know, because I hung out with you guys as much as anybody. But I don't know, you know.
Yeah, well,
nobody
I remember the carnivals in Santa Cruz, you know, blue paint.
Water fights.
Oh my. So, where, at the end of all this, what do you think, what did you take away from it, that experience?
Well, it ended up affecting a whole career, because I've now been, since then, I've been overseas for 25 years. I ended up in the Foreign Service.
So it was really a life-changing experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you want something that's going to, for me, it really affected, you know, which direction I went. And, and I think it was just, you know, piqued my interest. I know that I became motivated to go back to school and to get a graduate education, because I felt when I was in the Peace Corps that I really, as a young person down there, I didn't have anything to offer them. Mm-hmm. And I said, if I'm going to go back overseas in a career in any way, I need to prepare myself so that I have some skills that will make a contribution to the country that I'm in. Because in the Peace Corps, I didn't have any skills.
Mm-hmm.
Made it, you know. So the old axiom of, you know, do no harm, you know, I really believed in. And for the most part, tried to live by it. So I didn't do any harm, but I didn't do any good either. But when I went back to school with some motivation to learn a skill, and ended up with a PhD in agricultural economics, and got hired back with, after a three-year tour in Vietnam, and then some time off to get rid of a wife and etc. Went back to graduate school, went back to work for USAID, and then went directly back overseas and stayed the whole career with AID.
So, tell me a little bit, when you got out of Peace Corps, you went to Vietnam, right?
First of all, I went back to school and finished my undergraduate degree, finished in 65, then got a job with USAID in 65. So I had the degree plus Peace Corps experience. They hired me in 65. And to go to Vietnam. And there was some draft issues involved at the time because I was still single. But I went back to Washington and I recruited people for Vietnam for USAID. I had also recruited people for Peace Corps. And then I went to Vietnam and I was in Quang Nai province for 3 years. And I left right after Tet 68.
Okay, so what kinds of things, were you working with farmers there?
Or? Yeah, refugees and farmers.
Refugees.
Okay. Yeah. Big programs, lots of responsibility, very difficult situation.
Yeah.
And it was a nasty area that I was in, and
yeah,
I was lucky to get out of there.
Okay, so talk about what you think you got out of the Peace Corps.
Well, certainly an appreciation for other cultures. I think, you know, growing up in California and growing up in a community that was 50% was Mexican American. I grew up with that culture, but really you don't learn to appreciate them as much until I went to Latin America. And then I developed a real love of Latin people, and that stayed with me. But I think, you know, in terms of Bolivia itself, you know, Bolivia is pretty much a basket case, except, I mean, it's got pockets of real wealth and be able to create it, but because of its large indigenous population and it's, you know, it's always going to be one of the basket cases. And there's several that have served in Africa the same way. They're just, you know, difficult to see how they're going to, you know, really move. But I've been back a couple of times. And, you know, Santa Cruz itself is a booming metropolis, you know. But Mineros, where we were, Saavedra, nothing. Minero, in fact, the road bypassed Saavedra. Saavedra died a slow death when the road went around it, because they paved it out that far. Mm-hmm. And then Mineros, they put a sugarcane factory out there. Lots of drug dealers. Mm-hmm. You know, no. It's difficult.
So one of the things that the goals of the Peace Corps was to provide technical assistance where requested to promote a better understanding of the U.S. and to promote better understanding of other peoples by Americans. So of those...
Well, two of them I think we did all right on.
Uh-huh. The better understanding of the U.S. and better understanding of other peoples by Americans.
Yeah, I think we did pretty good there.
Mm-hmm.
I think on the technical assistance side, but there are, there are real exceptions to that. Some people, really provided excellent technical services. You guys that were nurses or, had skills to offer.
Well, I figured out years ago that I was prepared to do the job they wanted me to do. 15 years later, I was prepared to do it. But there, I just did the best I could. So, okay, so tell me.
Do you remember taking that? Were you in the Jeep that night we took that lady to the hospital in Santa Cruz? She was pregnant, had the baby. Didn't we come and pick you up?
No, I don't remember. I think I was already in Santa Cruz maybe then, because I went to Santa Cruz.
We had a harrowing trip all the way in with a lady having a baby in the back of the Jeep. And
Lunell?
We got her in there. I think Lunell was in there and Mertis was in there. I think maybe the two of them were in. But she was a teacher at the school. Mm-hmm. That was some trip. And then we just pushed her in, and like the swinging doors at the emergency room, pushed her in. And then about 2 minutes later, this nurse comes out with a baby and hands me this baby. She assumed it was mine.
Oh, well. So tell me a little bit about the kinds of things you did after you got out. You said you worked for USAID for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And were you doing economic development or
yeah.
what?
Yeah, when we first started out, we were programming, the first assignment that I had after Vietnam, but was Costa Rica, and there we were doing alternative crops trying to diversify away from bananas and coffee, and very successfully started growing every kind of spice known, and it's quite an industry now in Costa Rica, and that was started really by the guy that I went to work for down there. He was a horticulturalist, and he started that project. We pushed it forward. But what we ended up doing as employees of aid were writing the documents that move the money.
Mm-hmm.
So we did a lot of analysis of the economy, a lot of analysis of the implementation capabilities of the government, and then trying to plug in where we could, either technical assistance or scholarships to train people to implement those programs.
Do you think you could have done that job without the Peace Corps experience?
Yeah, I could have, but probably.
Would have been.
Peace Corps didn't. I didn't think in. And by the time I got back there as with a PhD, I was rather analytical, in terms of data and the scope of what I was, the ability to analyze problems and to develop solutions for them was much, much different. I think as a volunteer, I wouldn't have had a clue.
Oh, no. But I'm thinking later on in your career where you ended up spending so much time overseas, if being in the Peace Corps had facilitated your being able to take that trajectory that...
Yeah, it probably started, you had empathy for the people you were working for.
Mm-hmm.
But you had to have that or you wouldn't have been in that business
pretty much. True.
I don't know if Peace Corps or anything, you wouldn't have that.
Okay, so do you have any other things that you want to mention?
No, I think that's good. I don't...
Okay, I think we're just about to the end then. I'll stop this.